So let's start. We'll do, I wanted to get through some basic Nikoros on two things. Number one, to talk a little bit about what Stutta is trying to accomplish. And number two, relatedly, to talk about the shear of Stutta, how much Stutta a person ought to give, or what's the expectation that Stutta giving. I want us to start with the Gemara Bava Basra Daf Tes Amud Aleph. The Machlokas Rav Huna and Rabbi Yehuda. So, any volunteers? Ezra, did you get a chance to prepare this Gemara and Daf Tes? Not yet? So, Ned, why don't you get us started? I'm Rav Huna. Louder, louder. What does this mean?
So, we will investigate to see if a person can afford food, if a person can afford clothing.
So, here the Gemara is clearly worried about a pretender. Someone who's lying about his needs to receive tzedakah, correct?
I don't know what the interaction between the Ani and the person here is. So maybe just we're trying to do the communal funds, and this person we're trying to evaluate whether or not he should receive. I don't think it might be.
So what kind of inquiry are we going to do to determine whether he needs it?
So I don't know if we're like saying, oh, I have a dollar for whatever.
Right? Is he showing up to the gabbai? Is he showing up to your home? And how's he presenting himself? But Rav Huna tells us that we have a distinction between what and what?
Ksutz
and izonos. What's that distinction?
Clothing and food.
Okay, so a distinction between clothing and food. So I want to make the first point here, that notice that tzedakah applies to both of these things. We're going to see that more explicitly in the Gemara and Ksivis, but obviously tzedakah is not just about food. It also applies to clothing somebody, giving them stuff to wear. Why does Rav Huna hold that you should do an inquiry to check whether somebody genuinely requires food, but you should not do an inquiry to check whether they genuinely need clothing? So let's just look at the Svara, hold off on the Gezeres HaKasev. Hi.
Hi,
Kamavazi, hi, Lo Kamavazi. What's that distinction?
One of them denigrates the lack of one denigrates
the
denigration of the
ani. One has busha, one is embarrassing, one is disgraceful. Yes?
Yeah, I don't know which one is,
but
I'm assuming
the
clothing is disgraceful.
Yeah, guy shows up naked, he has no ksus, shows up with no clothes. Not clear to me whether it means that he shows up actually naked, or it means that he shows up with rags, worn out clothing. The thought is that we're not going to do an inquiry to see whether he genuinely needs it because there's bizayon, meaning he's in a undignified state. Correct, Josh?
Yeah. What's the logic here? Are we saying that because this is such an undignified state, we just really want to make sure we help him, or is it more that he wouldn't be lying because nobody would want to put themselves in that?
Good. I think it's got to be the former.
Yeah.
I think the former is that. What's the pressing need? And the thought is that, oh, if a guy has no clothes, he's in such an undignified state, he's walking around naked, that's bizayon, and we just have to, that need is so pressing, it has to be met right away. That justifies putting aside an inquiry into whether he actually needs it. Sorry?
Why are we assuming that Mavazi makes it a greater need, not just better evidence that he's legit?
That's Josh's other option. Why? I'll tell you why. If the Gemara is about evidence, it's really hard to make sense of the other side. Hi, Kamitsarile. Hi, Lo Kamitsarile. Let's get the other side out for a second, and then we'll. So, Tanet, take us to Yehuda's view. Yeah, Yehuda has exactly the view that we do an inquiry for clothing, but we don't do an inquiry to see whether the guy needs food. Why don't we do an inquiry for food?
Hi,
kamitsarale, hi, lo kamitsarale. So what's this idea of
mitsarale? It's painful to the hungry.
Yeah, there's distress, there's pain, there's suffering, and we have to meet that need, correct? Now, Sekhar, you're asking, maybe this is all about what evidence we require, or how do you know whether somebody shows up starving?
So, I mean, we could read them as talk about. First one, say we have more evidence that he's probably needs to need to close because he wouldn't do this otherwise. And I'm not saying we have a lot of evidence for food because the possibility of combining food is so bad.
Yeah, but then you're saying the evidence issue is limited to Arjuna?
As in, it's different approaches. You could say either we have more evidence or we require less evidence.
But then you're saying that they're arguing about different things. No, because Rabbi Huda is saying the guy who has no food is in distress. Now, if we don't know whether in fact he actually has no food, you can't just assume that it's mitzarele. Maybe he went to Dunkin' Donuts, bought himself, I don't know, whatever junk they sell there, and then showed up pretending like he's starving. To my mind, it's strange to read the Gemara here as evidentiary. I think the thought is, no, you see a guy, you know that he has some need, or there's some, I don't know, some type of need, and we're saying that according to Rav Huna, the bizayon of being naked is a greater concern than tsar haguf, and according to Rav Yehuda, the bizayon of tsar is more of a pressing need than the idea of bizayon. You guys agree with that? That's at least one possible reading of the Gemara. Now, so in addition to the first Kiddush about Tzedakah extending to Ksus, you also see that there are two different concerns that Tzedakah is trying to meet. What are those two concerns? Ned?
The need itself and the resultant sparing of the
Yeah, good. So you could talk about, if I take it you're referring to this thing up here as the need. Yes?
Yeah.
And this is the emotional, let's say, or the psychological.
Psychosomatic.
What?
Psychosomatic is what I would say.
Yes. We don't have to borrow the real bad phrases. We could just borrow those good ones. That in addition to the actual physical needs, there's a notion of the, I'll use emotional or psychological, but I want to use a just different term, of the dignity of the ani. Now, it's actually not clear to my mind whether the capturing bizayon and tsar as dignity is equally relevant to both of them. If you had to split between the two, which one would you say is more about the dignity of a person? Ksus. Right? Bizayon, you might say, undermines the person's dignity. It's an open question to my mind whether tsar, being in pain, undercuts somebody's dignity as a person. Do you guys have a view on this? If you think yes, then both of these could be about the dignity of the ani. If you think no, then you could say, well, one of them is about dignity and one of them is about the pain or suffering of the ani. Did I say that? They're clearly related, though, in some sense. Sometimes people feel that if they're going to live such a painful life, then that's not a dignified way of living. I don't know. Anybody feel that way? Wake up with a headache and you feel like, end it now? No? Yeah, Josh.
Even if you can say that one thing that Sarah does, one piece of that is dignity. I don't know why you would want to centralize that.
You would not centralize it.
No, okay. Clearly the main issue is that the guy's in pain, no?
Okay. So you want to say this is about pain, this is about... Bizayon is about dignity, maybe, and Sarah's about pain.
So that's it.
Okay. You guys agree with Josh?
Yeah.
Sound reasonable?
Josh says.
What?
I like what Josh says.
Yeah, so maybe we can distinguish between the two of them. And then, if that's... if we go with Josh's approach, then you could say actually that Rabbi Huna and Rabbi Huda are disagreeing about which of these is more of a pressing need or which one of these is more central to tzedakah. According to the tzad that ksus gets precedence, according to Rabbi Huna, tzedakah is primarily or first and foremost to meet the dignity needs of the ani. And according to Rabbi Huda, that mizonos takes priority. It's about meeting the suffering of the ani. Are we in agreement on that? Now let's say a little more about this. To your minds, which of these is more central to the notion of tzedakah? The idea of tsar or bizayon, if I just had to ask you about it.
I would think tsar.
You would think tsar, why? Like relieving pain and suffering.
Right. of all, I think from the perspective of the giver, it's like better to relieve sorrow than it is to dignify someone.
Why do you think that?
Because like the tsar is more
pressing.
Pressing, I guess.
More basic, if they're more of a basic human need.
Yeah, and I guess from the perspective of Diani, like,
so I get it. There's an argument to think that pain and suffering is more of a basic type of need that has to be met, whereas dignity is like already a certain type of luxury need.
Someone comes up with some pyramid of like
Maslow.
Needs.
Yeah, Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Something.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, it just like has like this kind of framework where like, you know, initially people need like food, shelter, security, and they require like more psychological needs of like safety, other things, and they need more like fulfillment and like self-actualization and other stuff.
Yeah.
So his theory is that it's
until you get to
the and you start at the bottom, and once you're like in the bottom, you want that stuff filled. You like can only focus on that.
Right.
So that's like a little contentious.
Right. Right. Yeah. So you're saying that pain and suffering would be lower on that pyramid.
Yeah.
Good.
Like maybe you'd say like dignity, like the whole point of tzedakah is dignity. Maybe like pain and suffering is already supposed to be like taken care of somehow. Like the whole point of tzedakah is like some extra level of like not only are you supposed to make sure that people aren't starving to death, but like there's some extra level of dignity we're trying to say.
So I think what you're saying is interesting, but I'm not sure it's fair to just presuppose that that's taken care of prior to tzedakah. It definitely seems obvious that tzedakah is also to take care for those basic necessities. But I hear your point. I want to just point out. So I think we want to keep our eyes open, and we're going to see this explicitly, that both of these are going to be dimensions of tzedakah. Right? So so if we go with Josh's division here, you see that tzedakah is not only about meeting the actual physical needs, i.e. providing the honey with the particular goods and resources. Does anybody see that distinction? The distinction between goods and resources on the one hand and providing the honey with like the emotional or psychological goods? Right? The dignity and the tsar thing. Everybody see that distinction? And then, moreover, you get an internal distinction on Josh's account about the relative hierarchy, Machlokes Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, between the pain and suffering dimension and the dignity dimension of that. Right? Both two dimensions of the emotional, psychological dimension of tzedakah. Now, if I ask you a regal achas, before we see this even inside, could you point to any other aspects of tzedakah that support this level or this dimension of tzedakah that's not about the physical goods? Josh?
You're supposed to give it to them in secret so they're not asked.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of discussion in the Gemara about the method or the mode of giving tzedakah that supports this dimension. As Josh is pointing out, the idea that you're supposed to give an ani in private, right, or in a way that he doesn't even know who the giver is. So you could say a lot of the kpedas in the Gemara about how you give tzedakah supports the contention that the emotional or psychological or the dignity dimension is central to the very mitzvah of tzedakah. It's not just, oh, if you're going to do tzedakah, here's an ideal way to do it. The reason why it's an ideal way to do it is because part of the mitzvah of tzedakah itself is to protect the dignity of the ani. And if you were to give tzedakah in that bad way, it would undercut the kind of essential purpose of tzedakah. Sorry.
I think there are a few other like halachos of tzedakah which are clearly like there's only the emotional factor without any needs or goods. So like there's a lot of like I say with Varim, as in if you can't give him any substance, you should, it's still a kiyum of tzedakah to
good.
Appease him.
That comes up in Bavasa Daf Tess even. I mean, it comes up in our Gemaras. Does everybody see that? The idea of someone who's mefayis and ani also gets mekayim tzedakah. You know, just by building up the ani. Right, just by supporting him emotionally, or even if you can't give him anything. Yeah, so awesome. There's a lot to that.
And I think, like, secondly, you have, like, the Afilu Eben Rosh Bafana of, like, bringing him back to his original land.
Yeah, De Mahsoro, I think for sure.
There's no real objective need, but still human dignity.
Yeah. De Mahsoro, guys, we'll see, is, I think that's going to be one of the best Mekoros to support that dimension of tzedakah. Because obviously as a basic need, there's no basic need to have an Eved Ratz Lefanav, but you could say, of course, somebody who's been humiliated from their stature, there is a kiyum, maybe not a chiyah, but there's a kiyum in supporting the dignity of the person to give them that quality of life that they were used to. Yeah? Okay. So I really want to push that as a major theme in this part of the discussion of tzedakah, the idea that it's more about providing these particular goods for basic sustenance. So you had more to add to that, or no? Great, very good. Let me just point out an issue that all the Achronim here weigh in on, or many Achronim weigh in on. Anybody see the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Mem Dalet Amud Beis? Yeah, so what's going on there? Kobe, did you see the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Mem Dalet Amud Beis?
No.
No? Zev, did you see it?
No.
Not yet? Okay. Shmuel, have you gotten to it yet? Ned? So what's the issue here? What's the machlokas?
How we go about
stoning someone. Yeah, giving them skila.
So one option is we address him. The other option is cover him from the front and from the
front. Somehow my got cut off the rest of the Mishnah here.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
And
so it's machlokas whether for when you give somebody skila, do you undress them or not? Right, do you give them skila unclothed or do you leave them clothed for skila? What's the machlokas about? So the Gemara explains. Everybody, the Gemara thinks that everybody agrees to this memra of Rav Nachman, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha b'ror lo misa yafe. What does that mean? You should try to kill somebody the best way possible. So, you know, if you're deciding between like a firing squad and lethal injection. No, I don't know. But people do feel very strongly about this, about that the way you put somebody to death has certain moral rules, right? And that's what the Gemara is agreeing to in Baror Lo Misa Yafa. Yeah.
Very interesting rules, though.
Here.
In general, they tend to be less so about... more about optics than about morality, I must put it.
In this Gemara in Sanhedrin Mem Dalet, or in, you're talking about...
I've noted in both.
It's interesting. I mean, let's look at the example here. Here the example is, V'hacha b'ha kamifalgi mar savar b'zione d'inish adifale, t'fe mi nicha d'gufe. Mar savar nicha d'gufe adif mi b'zione. What does that mean? What? Yeah, what does nicha deguf mean? I was also wondering that. Yeah, easy on the body. The Gemara here sets it up as...
physical.
Oh, yeah, it's not obvious, right.
But it's not... It's weird. It would be a weird way of phrasing.
Yeah, well, at least bizione d'inish is clearly uncontroversial, right? What's bizione d'inish? Humiliation. So what does a person prioritize more? Or as worse? Their humiliation? Or nicha degufe? What is nicha degufe?
Sorry.
What?
Tsar?
Yeah, it might be tsar. It's not...
It's a weird phrase, but I can almost assume there's some more specific point there.
Yeah. Rashi here talks about how long it'll take you to die, right? To shahe olamos. And he does call it v'yafal gav di'ika tsara degufa. Right? Rashi, you can see, Dov calls it tsara degufa. So the thought is, this is Rashi in Sanhedrin, the thought is that you could either get a swift death, which eliminates pain, tsar degufa. That's the theory there is that if you're unclothed, you die faster. But if you're clothed, then you have more of a dignified death, right? You're not stripped naked in front of other people. So the machlokas in the Mishnah is a machlokas about what is preferable, what's considered a misa yafeh. What is the better way to die? With less pain or in greater dignity. Josh, you have a strong view about...
No, I was just going to ask. I mean, I was taught in school growing up that the reason they needed it naked is that they would have more embarrassment and therefore like more punishment in this world than just the next spelling, not a thing. Because that's what I was always taught.
I can't vouch for everything you were taught in school growing up. Sorry, Josh. Maybe if you lived in Israel and you were closer to the Geula, you would have a better education. No, I'm kidding. So Rashi here sets it up as a tension between those two principles, right? Now, the issue that bothers the Achronim is that we pask in different ways. We pask in differently in the Sanhedrin case of the death penalty, and in our case for Machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Huna about Mizonos versus Ksus. In particular, in Sanhedrin, we pask in that a woman is not killed unclothed. Meaning we favor what? We favor
dignity.
We want to make sure that she's not humiliated when she's put to death, even if it will bring more tsar. Correct? When it comes to our sugya, if you look at the poskim, they favor mizonos over ksus. Meaning they paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, which means that they favor tsar, minimizing tsar, over the dignity of the person. So some achronim, you can see here, for example, the Chablis Yair in Siman Kuf Tzadi Aleph, think this is a problem. They say, if you look in Bava Basra, for food, ain bodkin acharav, masha ain kain, give me clothes, where we are bodek acharav, and that's because tsara gara mi bizyona. What does that mean? Pain is deemed worse than being disgraced. Okay? So how do you square that with the Gemara in Sanhedrin? So he says this. Azay yishlashiv she'ein ledamos yachad mine tsar mine bizayon. What does that mean? What? Yeah, yeah. He's just saying, look, not all pain is alike and not all disgrace is alike. Correct? So you can't just have a absolute preference ranking between pain unqualified and dignity unqualified. It's actually the particular type of pain and the particular type of suffering that's going to bear on the rankings. Does that make sense? Yeah? I think that's very reasonable. Tzachar, you agree? Yeah? The Or Sameach says something similar. Here in Sanhedrin Tesvav Aleph, he cites this issue. Biziona de inish adifale tfe minicha gufe. This is unrelated, he says, to the discussion in Bava Basra Daf Tes about the Ani. How do you make sense of that? So he says two things. Number one, he says, Milvad de eno dome. This is the one I want to focus on. He says, you can't compare the two sugyas. The hamisa va fushe tsara have. Ubiziona adifala. Anybody know what he's saying in that one line? Josh?
I mean, I can kind of guess just because I don't know if this is exactly what he's saying, but when you die, when you're about to die, tsar is much less of an important factor than the desire, is what I would say, because once you're about to die, I mean, what's pain? But like, this is how you're going out forever. This is how people like remember you. Like, dying without dignity is a lot worse than
yeah,
dying with a little
exactly. Dignity. That's exactly right.
I don't know the exact opposite.
You just said the opposite?
I'm dying anyway. What's the worst that's going to happen?
Right, well, who cares if I'm undignified?
I'm more about being painless than about what... afterwards.
These are very deep disagreements here. People feel very differently about this. That what the Or Sameach seems to be saying is just that psychologically, when a person's going to die and they're going to experience a lot of pain anyway, the marginal difference of pain, the pain of... You're being thrown off a two-story building, bear in mind, right? We're trying to adjudicate the marginal... decrease in pain from wearing clothing.
As little time as possible.
What?
I wish you did a little
no, time. So he's saying in a trade-off between the marginal difference in pain of being killed clothed and unclothed is much less, it's worth much less than dying a dignified death.
Some part of me wonders, if you asked him the Gemara thing, what he would have answered.
I agree with that.
Right. I don't think it's so crazy. You get killed with your clothes on, and you'll suffer that marginal difference in pain. No biggie. But the Ani case is different, right? He's not suffering a lot of pain necessarily. I guess we don't know how much pain he's suffering. So in that case, it makes sense to first relieve his suffering and then worry about his dignity. That's the thought. But I agree. I mean, I do agree. It's, you could cut it in different ways.
Yeah, I think it's also hard to build intuition. I think the actual assumption that, like, you're wearing clothes, you get thrown on the building, you, like, die slower. It's a bit weird.
And we're not challenging the empirical assumptions. Like, Mara assumes that.
Because of the empirical assumption, it makes it difficult to build an intuition.
We're blocked. Right. We're blocked from having intuitions about how much faster you'll die.
Unless you're dressed like the Michelin Man, you know?
Right. I guess the thought was that your clothes shield you maybe from being stoned.
Well, you're also thinking, how tall are buildings in Babel and whatever?
Isn't
Shtei
Kong, like,
Kumash Adam,
isn't it, like, 12 feet?
Oh, you're also stoned.
I have got to try to get to...
Right, so yeah, I think that... Right.
I've yet to fully understand how this will work, but I don't think anyone wants a demonstration.
We'll do a sheer test outside.
The 10 spots are enough to kill. I'm just trying to figure out where the number comes from.
I mean, for a boar and...
Yeah.
I don't know, some of those potholes on the road. Right? 3 tvakam is enough to kill somebody. It's atrocious. There's a very interesting psychological observation that Arsamayach has. I just think he's wrong in applying it to our sugya. But he gets into Josh's territory where he says this. Bizoyon hu hergesh pnimi benefesh. What does he mean? That disgrace is, there's no objective metric for it, right? It's like a subjective state of mind. And he says, "V'chi yakar etzlo mamono mi bizyono, ein ze bizayon etzlo." He says, "Look, somebody who likes money more than disgrace." It's actually a very interesting comment. He said, "For somebody who likes money, who values money more than their dignity, once they make that decision that they like their money, they like money more than dignity, then they're no longer disgraced." When they make the decision to pursue money at the expense of their dignity.
Like a garbage man is embarrassed.
Correct.
He's like, I've got pension.
Exactly. And he's saying anybody who decides to ask for tzedakah when they're naked, they've already made an all things considered decision that it's worth it for them to ask, and so they've rationalized away the bizayon. I think that's the claim here. So his thought is,
if he has other clothes,
I'm not sure about that. He says, "Im yeshlo v'hu ramai." Certainly if he's a trickster, he says, "Ein lo bizayon klal de'eno nirgash klal." He's trying to say, look, somebody makes a decision to ask for tzedakah with no clothes on, so he's not he doesn't have a sense of bizayon.
It's provided that he's the trickster.
Yeah, that he's only doing this for the value of the outfit.
Still not convinced.
You think so?
Can we do a poll?
Why should those cases be different?
We should do a poll.
What?
We should get a poll for
right.
People who pretend to have no clothing and get money.
Why should the trickster case be any different? Meaning, let's...
taking off clothes to deliberately just get like $50 fucking out
of it. Then what? Correct. Same if I'm an ani. If I'm an ani and I have to beg, right? So then the need for my money... I make a decision that it's worth it for me to beg and ask rather than stay, like, not expose myself.
Oh, I don't think the begging itself is a bizayon. The bizayon is the state of nakedness, per se. I don't think the bizayon is the asking while naked. I think the bizayon is being naked.
Yeah, so seeing an ani who mamish has no clothing.
Yeah. So this guy just has to go streaking just to make $50, like, he doesn't care. The guy's actually just naked, has no other recourse. That's bizayon.
And what about the Ramai? Why not say that Tsar is also a psychological internal state of mind? Well?
This guy's actually like starving himself.
No, but he's a Ramai, right? He's starving himself so that he could... Well?
So that he'll get a free lunch, yeah.
Correct.
So you still are...
He's still suffering. Yeah. And Dov wants to say, well, same for the dignity thing, right? A guy who takes off his clothes to get $50, he's still disgracing himself. He just decides that it's worth it to disgrace himself. Right? It sounds like he's trying to say a decision to be mivaza means that it's not a bizayon for you. That's a Meir Simcha's claim here. It's not obvious, right? In the same way that a decision to be bitzar doesn't undercut the tzar, you could say bizayon's a bizayon, even if you consciously undertook the bizayon. Right. The reason why I don't like his analysis is just because I don't think it's right to read the Gemara as being, you know, Josh's second suggestion. This is all just a Ramai, right? A guy he is a Ramai, and we're just trying to catch him. Like we're trying to figure out what's the sample set of people who lie about these things.
Well, I mean, why isn't it about Ramai? It's all about Bodkin. It's not about priorities and stuff. Why would it be a lower Bodkin standard?
Just because the need is greater. Right? Somebody who is unclothed, that's already a reason to have to give them tzedakah, to put them back in a dignified state.
You know, diminishing tzedakah funds so someone doesn't need it and some other poor Ani is going to go hungry because of this, that's pretty bad.
Maybe. Maybe. Alright, so I don't want to get dragged into the Orsa Meach too deeply, but he's also interested in this tension between the sugyas, whether how you prioritize tsar versus dignity, and his move is to say that self-imposed tsar is still tsar, but self-imposed bizayon is not bizayon. That's kind of the main claim that he has. Everybody good with that? Dope?
What's the reason? There's sort of some tacit assumption that bizayon is the internal thing, which I'm not fully
correct. Yeah, you could say that bizayon is an objective thing. Like, you could be an externalist about bizayon.
The way that it is in the public perception and not by this individual's.
Yeah.
Same way, I don't think for tzar, you're going to ask each individual, honey, how much can you feel? You
right.
Assume that it's
feel like a needle prick and see, right, 1 to 10. Yeah, it's an interesting point. To what extent we're getting in the heads of the victim. Versus moving to an objective measure. Interesting suggestion. Okay, any comments on the bizayon versus tsar discussion? We're going to come back to that. Just want to flag over here how central these ideas are to the notion of tzedakah. Okay? So now I want to raise the second issue for today. These are related conceptually. And that is the shear for giving tzedakah. How much is somebody expected to give to tzedakah? And what does that reflect about the mitzvah? So, in our Gemara on Daf Tes, we have one shear that's offered. What do we have on Bel Basar Daf Tes as the shear? Later on we have that. Before that, what do we have? Tanan Hasam, Ein Pochsen La'ani Ober Mimakom La'makom Mikikar Bipundian. Me'ar Basayin Bisela. So, anybody remember what that shear is? Tosas discusses it, Rashi discusses it.
Like two meals.
Yeah, bread for two meals, mazon for shtei sudos. Okay? This is the arbasan besela, is the going rate of bread. And so an ani who's over makam l'makam, you're supposed to give them two meals worth of bread to eat, or food for two meals. Okay? So who is this referring to?
Yeah.
What? Maybe the gabbai, what type of ani?
A traveling one.
Oh, a traveler, yeah. Ani ha'over mimakom lamakom. So that's ani who's traveling. Correct? So he seems like a guy shows up in town. He says he needs food. You give him two meals worth of food. Right? Like, Lord of the Rings, I think. Frodo is traveling through all those little towns. Stop off at an inn. The town is obligated to support them with two meals. Right? Seems also for meals on the go, they should take two meals with them. And that's what you get from this Gemara. But it's an ani over makom l'makom, meaning he's not an ani yerecha, he's not a member of your town. You have no antecedent relationship with him. Even without living in Eretz Yisrael, it sounds like there's just like one peoplehood. Kidding, Benji. We're obligated to support the traveler who comes through. Okay, what happens if he stays over in town? So that's what we're told in the next part of the Braisa. Lon, if Ani stays over for the night, what do you have to give him? Parnasas Lina. Benji, what's Parnasas Lina?
Linens.
Yeah, Puryo Besagio. Rashi explains that means a bed. And what's a Besagio? Linen? Specifically a pillow, correct. So you get here again, paralleling what we saw in the first part of Shir. Again, stuff is obviously not just Mizonos. It's also the accommodations. Right? Mazon for two sudos, and the Puryo Besagio, which is a place to shelter for the night, with even with a pillow.
Are we giving him money to do that, or just we're doing those things for him?
What do you think when it's what do you think from this?
From there, it sounds like it's the money.
What? You think so? Just because of Parnassas?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if Parnassa means money or means support to sleep. And then the Gemara says, what is support to sleep? You give him a bed and a pillow. Right? I assume that if there's a way for him to use the money to go to a motel, that's just as good. But to my mind, it sounds like there's a chiyuv to get him those particular goods that he needs for the night.
Yeah, you get some talk about this contemporary talk about how getting, like, I don't know, homeless or others money on their own is like a more dignified way.
Nowadays.
Right,
but you have economies where money doesn't have purchasing power, right? In which case, better to actually just, right? If there's a shortage of, if money doesn't, can't get you those goods, then obviously the tzedakah is to provide the goods themselves, right? Okay, so we have that lun. So if Ani stays over, you have greater, why do you have greater obligations if Ani stays over?
Because then you need more stuff.
Yeah, exactly right. It's really just that Ani has greater needs, right? If he needs a place to sleep, then it's on you to provide him with his sleeping needs. Does everybody see that?
Yeah.
So nothing special about the status of staying over. The point is that the townspeople just have to provide him with his basic needs for his stay. So meals for traveling and a place to sleep. Yeah.
Yeah. If your person comes in, we will provide for you, so you don't go door to door annoying everybody.
Yeah, good. We'll get to that in a second. Shabbos, if the Ani stays for Shabbos, or Shavas, or Shabbos, two different ways of reading this, then you have greater obligations to him because he has greater needs. So we'll, there's what to talk about there. We'll get to that. We're going to come back to the Ani. Machzir ala psachim ain is kakin lo. Dov here is just wondering if the Ani goes door to door to beg rather than going straight to the kupa or the tamchoy that's controlled by the gabai, then we dafka are discouraged from supporting him over a certain amount. We'll have to figure out why that is. One suggestion that we've shown him have is just because he already figured out how to support himself. If he's snoring door to door, then he'll get from everybody a little bit, right? So it's not the case that the gabbai has to support him because he figured out a way to support himself going house to house. Meaning he has a means of income separate from the gabbai tzedakah. That's one way of looking at it. Dov, you're reading it as a deterrent, right?
It's, assuming these are all coming from the same thing, it sort of gets a sense for...
Where right. Here's a homeless shelter so that you don't knock on people's door to stay in their house. Right? Here's a soup kitchen so that you're not stealing from or begging at Walmart. Right?
But by the way, it's been sort of standardized. Your poor person comes, there's a sort of infrastructure to take care of it.
Yeah, to centralize the institution. We'll look at this Gemara more closely to see how the Rishonim read it. Rashi reads it the first way that I mentioned, which is just that it's like having... Begging is an income also, right? So if you can meet half your needs from begging, there's no reason why the tamchoy and the kupa have to provide you with all your needs. Okay? The question, though, is how does this shir that we just read in Bava Basra square with other shirim for tzedakah that we find elsewhere? It's the Tosefta and Peya, which, you know, is one version of this brisa, has a hint about this. Anybody see this Tosefta Dalet Ches? What does the Tosefta add to the discussion? Zacharia? Oh, Benji?
That if you like know the guy, then you're chayav to do more than if you don't know.
Yeah. He thinks that the Tosefta adds that if you... He quotes the Did of Ani Ha'over Mimakom L'Makom. So you have to give him food for two meals and a place to sleep. But he says, that's only Bizman She'ein Makirin Oso. Aval Bizman She'makirin Oso Af Mechasin Oso. So the question is, what's that qualification? Like, why is there something special about needing, about knowing the Ani?
I assume it has to do with the same distinction that's between Ani Ha'over and Ani Ha'ir. That when, you know, the closer within the inner circle, the more you personally are chayav to support. If it's a family member, then you're chayav to support more than if it's...
Okay, so it could be. So notice what Benji's saying. Sorry. Line is true. In the Tosefta, you get this idea of makirin oso, then mechasin oso. Something about if you know the Ani, that imposes a greater obligation of support on him, on the B'nai Ha'ir. Yeah? Do you guys agree with Benji's reading? Maybe? Yeah. So something about knowing him, being familiar with him, that could up the burden from simply Mazon, Shtei Sudos, and Puryo Vesagya, which is the sleeping arrangements and food, to also having burdens to help the guy get a suit or get him clothing to wear once you're makir no so. So Benji, you want to say that's something like equivalent to the aniye yircha versus like aniyim from a different place.
Right.
Yeah.
And alternatively, you could say that he would only be embarrassed in front of people that he knows.
Ah.
So, meaning, so it's dafka masnio, you know, so it's like, meaning, all other people, he's just going to fulfill his tsar needs, but now that he's like in company that he knows.
Oh, interesting. It's like not undignified for a guest to show up in, for a non-familiar person to show up in rags.
Right.
But if you're already familiar, then it's bizayon, and that has to be
it's much greater bizayon to, you know, be naked in Tinac than it is to be naked in Argentina.
Yeah, I hear that. I like that. It's a very sharp point. Both points are very good. Scott, you have a thought on this?
It's a little less exciting answer, but I think maybe it's just like a deeper point. Like,
yeah.
Makir is just Makir, that he is enough.
We know that he needs it.
Anyone is hungry every day. Like, everyone needs to eat every day.
In which case, it's just a variation of the Gemara's point that Tsar... you give everybody, you alleviate everyone's tsar, but for Bizayon, there you have to know that he really needs it first. Yeah. So that will depend on whether Makirinosa means that you're familiar with him or that you know his financial straits. Yeah, good. Okay, so that's the Gemara Bava Basra test. Then the next major shear that you find in the Gemaras is Ksuvis Samech Zayin Amabez. What do we find there in Ksuvis Samech Zayin? So we have Tanur Rabbanan. Anybody prepare this? Chaya, take it away.
Sure. So Tanur Rabbanan, Yasom Shaba Lisan. So a orphan who wants to get married.
And Rashi here says, he needs money from Tztaka to get married.
Yeah. So how much do we give him? So Sofren Lo Bayis, Matsiyan Lo Mita. So we rent the house, providing the bedding and all the household kalim, and we marry him a woman.
Yeah, so would you say that's generous?
Yeah, very generous.
Yeah, very generous. I mean, basically the Gemara just said that whatever this guy needs, the tzibor has to provide for him, right? You buy him a house, you give him a bed, kol kli tashmisho, you pay for his wedding. Right, I mean,
was like frying pan.
What?
Beitashmish was like frying pan stuff. Like a household.
Yeah, well, aren't you getting married soon? You know how expensive those things are. It's not like no stick pots or something like that.
You can get the
stainless
steel. You can get the yes stick.
Yeah. I don't know. What's the cold clay tashmisho?
The stuff you put on the registry.
Yeah, I think it's stuff you put on the registry, right? Yeah, wash whatever it is they need. But I think this is very generous. I mean, you get him a house, you give him a... So from Labais, I mean, it's not just a motel to slum in.
Yeah.
Right? Kol klei tashmisha matzien lamita. Yeah. Josh.
Is yasom meant to just stand in for a poor person, or is it dafka?
Yeah, I think it just means yasom that he has no access to money from family, right?
I think the context is like a soma, like if you give her a dowry, just like that.
What?
I think the context of the Gemara is talking about like how much of a dowry you give a soma.
In the context.
Yeah, just like that's what
I'm saying. Yeah, correct. But I don't think this is uniquely a dowry. This is.
No, I'm just saying that's what I'm talking about. Yasom.
Yeah, that's why I think Siddhis and Mazayim. Yeah. So the Gemara Darshan is from a Pasuk, Shanemar.
Right, Shanemar, De Mahsoro Asher Yatsar Lo. De Mahsoro is that bias. Asher Yatsar is that Mitra Shultan, Lo, Zokisha, Kino Umar, Yatsa, Lo, Asher Kanefa.
So what do you make of the extension to. So a bias, fine. That's, I think that's huge. Right? That's way more than the Gemara has in Baba Basa Daftas. Correct? Yeah, somebody, I was speaking to somebody the other day. Did I tell you guys this? And he told me, I asked him, like, how's life going? He's like, oh, it's very tough. Like, I don't have access to a car for dating. So I can't date. And, you know, yeah, like, I, the basic chiyuv tzedakah there would be to, like, get this guy a car, I guess. No? Even just as, like, a basic din under this Gemara. So what does the Gemara say? So I think bias is a chiddush. But what do you make of Masi and Lo Isha? What's going on there? Does that just mean the costs of the wedding?
Something worth like higher shafa? Like, what does it say?
Yeah. I think it means...
There's a whole process back then. There's a way to deal with all that. There's a whole messy legal process beyond just fiducian for...
Right, but my question is the tzedakah here going beyond the money? Like, Masi and Loisha, like, you're not paying off the woman. Here's 10 grand.
Go
pay off a woman to marry you. You know?
Sort of help sponsoring all that stuff.
So you look at it as financial?
Part of financial, possibly, with some stuff needed other people, and they're too volunteer for that.
Wait, so Shmuel, you agree it's financial, or you think it's different?
I mean, in the context of everything else going on in that sentence, it seems financial. Listen, I could hear the argument otherwise, but that's my intuition.
What do you make of Lo Zuisha v'chinu Omer Asa Lo Ezer Kenegdo? So again, just, here's the whole limud. All right, take us to the pasuk Ne'amar
De'machzoro. De'machzoro Asher Yachzar Lo. So, that Masoro, that Bias, Shayachsar, Sevitu Shulban, Lo, Zaisha, Kino Umar, Asa Lo, is your
name. So the question is, what's that Lo thing at the end? What?
I think there are other meanings that we're fulfilling beyond financial.
Right, meaning if you read Asa Lo, Ezer Kenegdo over here as being part of the Limud, I don't think Hashem was paying for Chava to marry Adam, right? It wasn't a financial gift. I thought the point is that Adam was like, Lo Topeos Adam Levado, he was Chaser. De Machzoro is to fill his need. What is need? What's his need? He needs a companion.
This gets into some territory that you might not want to get into, but the question of what Ezer Kenegdo there means might impact upon our interpretation of this Gemara.
That's a very enigmatic comment.
Yeah.
Too enigmatic.
All you have to say is we may not want to get into it, and then I want to get into it.
There's too much information to not just get into it out.
Right. Just tell us what it is.
Like, then Ezra talks about it being like, you know, like, help me just pragmatically. Like, you could cast it in almost financial terms. Almost. Maybe.
You mean like a
woman housemaid?
Yeah, like a house helper?
Yeah, sure.
You don't need the Ibn Ezra. You have 19 centuries of the institution of marriage to support that. I mean, probably more than 19 centuries. But what?
Nothing.
But even I don't think that's financial. I mean, you're basically saying he's cost. I guess it's similar to a bias. I guess that's your point. I mean, fine. I mean, I don't. Even if you say that SLAs or Kinesio is more than house help, right? I mean, you can still look at it in financial terms, right? It's you are paying for a companion, no? Or a friendship, whatever it is. But I think that moves us a lot. It's out of way out of the category of. You know, you were asking Ned, is it writing a check for the Puryo Besagyo? Or is it providing the actual goods? Here it just seems obvious that it's the facilitating the marriage that's the Kino Tzedaka. Shmuel, you're persistent to that reading?
I'm okay with that reading. I just question, like, why are we assuming that this... like, we understand why Yasuo needs help financially. Why
yeah.
do we assume he needs help, quote-unquote, socially to facilitate a marriage?
Oh, I think the idea. I think.
Yasuo goes with.
I actually think the Shenemar de Machsora, that drasha, is already moving away from the Yasuo. The Yasuo is just the guy, the example of somebody in need, or a non-Yasuo has parents who could help him out. You know, you figure they have a support system. But what about the poor person who has no support system, and it becomes our obligation to see to it that their needs are met?
Not against it. I'm not against the idea in general. I'm just reading a little bit.
My reading.
Yeah, but I think there's value.
Are you allergic to the idea that Tzedaka is
no,
beyond?
No, I'm specifically trying to say that I'm not allergic to saying Tzedaka goes beyond financial.
Got it.
But just in the context of this, it's a little
bit. So I actually want to say two things. I want to say, first of all, I think that this shows that Tzedaka goes beyond financial. Could we agree to that, at least as a plausible reading? Right? So that's the first point I want to make. Beyond that monetary contribution, right? But I also want to say, number two, thinking about the spectrum or that pyramid of basic needs, distress, pain, and dignity, maybe this is where Ned's point becomes more relevant, is just where does the Matsiyin Lomita and Matsiyin Loisha, specifically Masi and Loisha, Aslo Yezer Connecto, Aslo Yezer Connecto, where does that fall on that spectrum?
It's probably not like bare survival.
What?
Like, you wouldn't say it's like,
right.
Unless you like want to give like a real board. Like, I don't want to say it's like survival.
Right. So Tog, I guess, right. I'm about it. Yeah. Tog is
not
ideal. So we had Tsar. Yeah, Bizayon, right? Like, I need to talk about, you know, Chaser Tov, right? You're lacking what's considered good for you, right? So I just say Masi and Loisha, I think it's just a very interesting category to try to figure out what at what stage that enters. Maybe it's type of dignity. Maybe it's considered, like, undignified to be, like, the only single person in town.
Yeah. I don't know if it matters at all in terms of tzedakah, but being... getting married is a mitzvah, right? Like, in the same way that we say that the community should chip in to teach the children Torah.
Right.
I don't know if that affects tzedakah at all.
Using tzedakah as tzedakah latching onto or becoming entangled with other mitzvahs.
Right, in order to be able to do the mitzvah.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. Here, in terms of Masi and Loisha, it seems to mix into other mitzvahs. Yeah, great point. Any other thoughts on this example?
The intent here is teaching for the sake of a mitzvah. As in the whole setup here isn't,
it's not mitzvah based, do you think? Oh, there are three dinim and getting married. There's a mitzvah, and then there's the.
You decide on the institution of getting married, and so you can take that.
And he's chaser it.
You're the fundamental part of communal living. In the same way, they're getting in my house and meet to the shulchan and all that.
Right. So Joe's response is that there's a non-mitzvah aspect to marriage also. Right? You heard it here for the first time.
The other person there was finding out how to command.
Right.
Probably the person who was nowadays also.
They wanted Tov. They want Lo Tov HaZad Levado. They wanted to enhance the quality of their life. Right? Yeah. Okay, so now let's look at the next part of the Gemara.
So,
Tanur Rabbanan. Tanur
Rabbanan de Maser.
Yeah, I love how this introduces the brisa about De Machzoro, because on the face of it, they seem so at odds with each other.
It doesn't. It's a drush on the
Dame Asra,
which is
followed by
different drush on Asher Yaksar,
though.
Which seems very...
Right. We're just missing the concept of Ashlishi and Machriya Beneyam.
Respectable upper bound, lower bound.
Correct. So good. So let's start with the upper bound. The upper bound is... I agree with that reading. I mean, I think it is... they qualify each other. So yeah, so let's start with Demach Zoro.
Yeah, so you're Mitzuba to Mepharnish him, whatever that means, and life support. And you're not commanded to make
rich. Great. That's a distinction we saw. I think this is a very crucial, important distinction. We saw this already where? Yeah, Rabbanan Labayin at Yerusha. What if the Talmid Chacham has a side hustle to make money, and then they're the post-game distinguished by Kobe? I hope the Samaritans are Matzliach. We saw that if you have a side hustle, there's a distinction whether the Talmid Chacham's side hustle is to become rich or just to support himself, right? To support himself was okay. He still qualifies for the tax break. But if he's working l'hashir, then he's like the Amonam. Right? Do you guys remember that? Yeah. Now, this is such an important distinction because where do we think the distinction lies? Like, where do you draw the line between l'hashir versus l'farnes? So what do you guys think the distinction is?
I don't think you really draw such a fine line.
All right,
like, and you point to things that are clearly in one category as opposed to the other, but like the previous thing, you might have thought that marriage is more of it is a beyond the basic survival thing.
Good. Yeah, remember, it's going to be a little difficult to figure out exactly where to draw the line, but it is clear to me that the halacha here is distinguishing between two different types of property, claims, entitlements, pursuits. Lefarnes.
This whole luxuries versus needs or something like that?
Yeah, good. Lefarnes is a type of meeting your needs. Whether these are basic needs or non-basic needs or just halachic needs, those are needs. Lahashir is a type of already, I'm going to say, indulgence.
Luxury.
Yes.
Yeah. Normal words we might use for it.
Yeah. Or luxury, like the pursuit of already richness and luxury, lavishness, right? Lahashir is pursuing wealth. You know, here in YU and in the modern Orthodox community at large, in the Orthodox community at large, everyone says they're just, you know, pursuing their parnasa, right? It's not true. Usually people are pursuing lahashir. It's very clear that parnasa, you know, is a much more basic needs or meeting your needs, not saving for your retirement nest egg even. We'll see some discussion about this. Maybe that could change. Maybe that could change based on society. But I think when most people are talking about, you know, they talk about their vacations and stuff like that, that's clearly the hashir, not parnasa. So how are you going to say something?
Yeah, it's like, there's a shop we saw, the hashir to include, like, oh yeah, even like an emergency fund is not considered a hashir. That's pretty interesting.
Right, like an emergency fund.
Yeah, so that was like a very interesting.
Right.
You also apply that to the Kolomoi, the Shvita, things that, you know, the question of what's for Harvath and what's for...
Yes. Yeah. Like, what's the Minyasa Hefzid and... like the standard for Bita Melachan, for Melachan Chol Hamoed. Yeah. It's not just that you're making less money. Are y'all, right? That's the point. Good. Okay, so that's the first qualification that you get from the Gemara, very important. And then you get the second part of the Gemara.
So, Asher Yaksar Lo, Afil Susu Chol Balav, Be'ever Lo'ul Sufanav. Amr Lo Chol Zakim, Shalaka Fa'ani Ben Tovim, Echad Susu Chol Balav, Be'ever Lo'ul Sufanav. So, we're darshing or asmachta paying from the latter of the pasuk, even on a horse for him to ride on, and then a slave to run in front of him. And they said about Hillel that he would buy for an ani who was the son of Tovim, which I'm asking rich people here.
So he was the son of rich people, right?
He used to be rich, a horse to ride on, and an ani to run in front of. And one time he couldn't even find a. Find
Evan
to hire, so
Hill
himself ran
in front of him. Good. Now, how do we square two questions? Number one, this brisa on its own merits. Asher yachzar lo afilu sus lirchov alav eved laritz lefanav. You know, this is the the Gemara that puzzles everybody when they talk about tzedakah. How could you say that there's a kiyum of tzedakah to provide for this person's what seems to be luxury needs? Sus lirkovala v'aved laretz lefanav. I actually don't know. What was the social connotation? Like, what was the social function of the Aved Laretz Lefanav?
I thought it was like totally like a Haman Mordechai thing. Like, the guy just mechabed them.
Like a motorcade.
Yeah.
Motorcade?
Total code.
I'm pretty sure I saw Jerry Nadler. You know Jerry Nadler's? Senator from New York. I'm pretty sure I saw him at the train station today. And there was like a security detail hovering around him in the Amtrak
line.
Well, no, right. So maybe it wasn't an ever. They were Rutz La'acharov. They weren't in front of him, and they weren't calling. Right. So you think it's just an honor guard?
As opposed to what? Like someone to like physically make him a path?
You know what? So let's say sus lirchovalov. To my mind, that's transportation. Okay. That's like having a what? Just covered. Interesting. I thought this is like, look, most people, it's transportation. Most people can't afford transportation. But if somebody's used to having a car, tzedakah is to give them a car. Like when this guy said to me he needs money for a car to date. So you could say, what do you mean? Like none of our grandparents had cars when they were single. Access to a car, right? Take the bus. Well, right. Both ways uphill. But you might say, look, but if you're Ben Tobin and you're used to having a means of transportation, maybe that's considered a basic need. The child, what's the Eved Laretz Lefanav? Is that just an honor? If it's just an honor guard, it's very hard to think make sense of it. If it's like the guy who makes your horse move, right, then maybe it's part of the transportation, like the engine, right, or the steering wheel. If it's mamish a luxury thing, it's much harder to understand, especially since it's following the Iyata Mitzvah La'ashra. Josh Lindov.
I don't know if it's so hard to understand if we take, what was it that we just saw, that dignity is like a subjective and
objective
thing?
Yeah.
And if, once you say dignity is a need, then...
Yeah, good. So if you move to just the dignity reading, I mean, that this is about dignity, and you can say, sure, the guy's used to his limousine, then there's the mitzvah de machzoro to give him his limousine. You could say that. And I think when people get all upset about that, how could tzedakah be de machzoro mamish, like give him a limousine, doesn't that just seem extravagant, right? And how do you square that with eina mitzuveh alav la'oshro? So let me ask you, Josh, how would you square it with eina mitzuveh alav la'oshro?
I would say that once psychologically to him it's a need, or,
I don't like that.
Ooh,
yeah, I don't think we want to say that. Because then you feed that, like what, people are entitled to allow this to become their need?
Right.
What? Yeah, what, there are rights in halacha now?
I wonder how similar this is to the pergola when the wall came down and it hasn't created. Like, you know, the guy is used to having
a problem. Yeah, Tosos, right, pergola. Uh-huh. I thought you were saying something in like French. You're like the pergola. The pergola.
Sorry? I don't know if they use like Perkiomus' definition of Shiro. Like, Samath Bechelko cuts both ways. Like, someone who is unsafe Bechelko until he gets this much, like, he's not enough.
Wow, what a
perversion. Just beyond what they expect out of life.
What a perversion of the Mishnah novels. Yeah, it's Ezra Samath Bechelko, and you're saying. Even a guy with millions of dollars, he's not Samach Bechelko. He's an uneed, a poor guy.
It's like that someone could be really unhappy,
right.
And not feel rich even if they are well. Like, there's no mitzvah for the uneed to like become a super virtuous instantaneously before he tastes it out, though.
Right.
Like, that's not what we demand from
him. Yeah, it's a Bashir Usham, where he's at, psychologically, and right. It's interesting. What I would say to help this is that Bima Dayik and the this will be our last point for today, and then we'll pick up with the rest of the Gemara. I'll be medayik in the tension between the two parts of the Braisa. So do you guys see a diak here in the formulation? So, de machzoro, ata mitzuva alav lefarneso, v'iata mitzuva alav la'osho, shoyach salafidus is lichov alav, avid la'aretz lefanav. Josh?
Maybe that the second part, you're not commanded to do that.
Oh, excellent. The first part has Ata Mitsuba, Olav. What is the obligation of Tzedakah? The second part just says Afilu, which might just be about a kium of Tzedakah.
The Maaseh Rav also probably implies that it's superoratory.
The story that comes here.
Right, if it really was true, then it should be, and every topic's about the holy business.
Right, right. So I think it's very sensible to distinguish here between what's a chiyuv of tzedakah, what's obligatory, and the answer is, in terms of your tzivoy is lefarneso, not to make him rich. But then the second part of the brisa says, asher yachzar lo, says, well, that's not to exclude that there could be a kiyum mitzvah in making him rich, insofar as it satisfies the dignity component of tzedakah, that if he used to be a Ashir Ben Tovim and now he was Yored from his wealth, there's a kiyum tzedakah in preserving the dignity that he had given the lifestyle that he had. But I would add to that a Chiddush Ladina, which I think is obvious, and we'll discuss the poskim who seem to get this idea, is that of course we would prioritize an ani whose basic needs are not met over the tzedakah to an ashir who wants a sus lirchov alav and an eved laretz lefanav. Right? So the mere fact that there's a kiyum tzedakah to help out an ashir who is yored migdulaso because of the way it preserves his dignity doesn't mean that it's the exact same type of zchus or kiyum that you have for getting an ani out of his tsar, you know, with no food to eat. Now, in fact, you could say that even if they're both chiyuvim. I mean, even if you want to say that, contrary to my diak and Josh's diak, that even if you want to say the seifa of achshar yachzar lo means that there is a mitzvah in that case, there's an obligation to put him back into his dignified level of living, right? Even if it's a luxury that he requires for his dignity, I think we would all agree that that is not as pressing or as basic of a tzedakah obligation as an ani who needs food on his table. Right? You can't say, this guy, he needs a limousine and this guy needs breakfast. They're both chiyuv tzedakah, we'll just give it to, you know, anyone we want is kosher. I think even if you held they're both mitzvahs, you would say that one of them makes a greater claim on your chiyuv.
I mean, but the fact that we're specifically not qualifying that, doesn't that specifically go opposed to
what do you mean they were not qualifying what?
We're not saying that, give to the guy who needs food on his plate before you give to the guy who fell out of dignity. Wouldn't that imply that we haven't qualified it yet, so that would imply that, wait a minute, maybe dignity does come before tzahar and starving.
Anybody want to respond?
That's not my intuition, and Shmuel? I think that would be challenging.
Right.
But we haven't qualified it.
Right.
So.
You know, it's like when they ask the Rav, like, where do you know this from? He's like, a clear and logical mind.
Right.
You know, I don't think you need Rashi to tell you here, like, but if you have a guy starving, you know, his life comes before the sus lirchov lefanav. That's that, right. This is the Ibai Sema Svara type. Now, does anybody disagree with me? Or, yeah. Sahara, you want to get the last word?
I don't know if it's like a practical story, but a more like concrete example of the latter thing.
Oh.
My dad told me a story all the time. Or, I don't remember the
now you have to know what percentage of Shir is story time.
Yeah. It's like a situation where like someone who lives in five towns and maybe the father passed away and like Lana and family couldn't pay for the mortgage of their like five pounds house. So you might argue, okay, they should like downsize.
Right.
And like the guy's friends like all got together to like pay for the person's mortgage, like can still live the same like dignified life in the same community.
And right.
It's like a very classic example, but it's not like strictly the need, but like I think it's like a very powerful and really salient example. Like, it's clearly a tremendous kingdom.
Right.
In the latter.
Correct. The question is, would we all agree, there it's tricky actually, would we all agree though that if you have an ani who's starving, that
right.
comes...
It's not a communal fund. It's like people who decide their own initiative to do this act.
In Englewood, I remember I was mortified, like in my earlier years there, when Ray Golden would fundraise, and he would say, look, we have families in this neighborhood, economic downturn, they can't pay for their mortgages, can't pay their real estate taxes. And you're like, okay, so let them close up shop, and why should you have a house that has $30,000 in real estate taxes a year? Like, are you going to start collecting from other people to help someone pay a $30,000 real estate tax? That's kind of morally perverse. Now, yeah, downsize, right? Move into an apartment. But the counter argument is like, no, this is a standard of living they're used to. And but on the other hand, I mean, this gets into the discussion in the Gemara already. It's like when one of these aniyim is challenged here, where it says, you know, you're gonna matriach the tzibor with your, you know, with your support. So I think it's a real tension, right? It's not obvious what the right thing to do in that case is. Did you guys catch that in this Gemara? Let's see. Yeah. Lo chayshle duchka ditzibura. Right? You're going to make the tzibur support you with this tarnigoles petuma and yayin yashan. Right, so that's part of the... And actually, Rava in the story here is like, yeah, that's crazy. You can't impose this as a burden on us. Hi, that's your case. On the other hand, that's the person's social group and their friends and the kind of way that they're used to living. But in the Dover Soap, you say the same thing if they're living in a multi-million-dollar apartment on the Upper East Side. Right, now the tzibor has to bear that responsibility for them. Right, but here, if you say it's a kiyum, yeah, it's much easier to swallow.
Yeah.
Right. All right, Shkaka, we'll stop here. Let's pick up with this the rest of the Gemara in Ksuvah Samach Zayin about Dei Machsoru, and then I want to just look at the discussion of Lo Yifchos Mishlishis HaShekel, Daf Tetz. Then I want to talk about the Kefi Machsorim Shel Aniyim, that Staka is set by the needs of the Aniyim. That's a little later over here, Rambam Zayin Aleph and Manas Aniyim. And then we're going to talk about the myth of Meiser. Of Meiser Ksafim.
Okay, I couldn't
know
if it was Meiser or
Meiser. Meiser Ksafim. Meiser Ksafim is one of those things where like every Sims guy knows that you have to give.
Also, like, real posting say that now.
What?
Like, post game, talk about it. Right?
No, of course, yes. But that's what you know about Stucka. Like, Stucka is Meiser and everything else is a Chiddush. When you look at the halachic sources, it's the exact opposite, right? I mean, Meiser is as the weakest basis as the stock obligation. But even the Das Yafet Es Deraisa, it's very clear that it's not a central Deraisa. You know what I'm saying? De Machzoro is also Deraisa in a certain sense, right? But you wouldn't, I mean, there's a question like, what's the ikar of the... All right, Shkakas.